All work and no podcast makes Johnny a dull boy. All work and no podcast makes Billy a dull boy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why tonight, on this episode of The Last Knock, we are discussing the fact that Stanley Kubrick's The Shining is turning 40 in 2020. I am Johnny Numb. Joining me tonight, as always, is
Billy Crash.
And Billy, have you always been the podcast caretaker here?
Oh, I've always been the caretaker.
Oh, I just want some ice cream, Bill, you know.
Give me the goddamn bat.
So, yeah, big anniversary for Stanley Kubrick's film.
Yeah, and it's a poignant one because, you know, it's always been labeled as a horror classic, and there are, I think, just as many people who don't like it today who also love it today. And you and I are in both camps. You hate it, I love it.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe Bill, let's talk about what's your history with the movie. Did you see it in the theater? When did you first become aware of it? When did you first see it, all that happy stuff? I'm curious.
I think I first saw it on cable. I don't recall seeing this in theaters, which I wish I had. Okay. And as soon as it started, and it still does to this day, because it's something I always try to remember whenever I watch any horror movie, is right from the beginning, they showed this little friggin' Volkswagen going up a road, nice sunny day, helicopter shot, and the music is just really compelling, and you get this knot in your, well, at least I did, I was like, my stomach's in a knot. This atmosphere is weighing heavily on me already, and it's just a Volkswagen going up a road. And they just conjured this element of suspense right from the beginning, for me anyway. And I was in. Just like before the show started, we were talking about briefly the Headhunter, you know, Palco at Palco Designs loved it, and I did as well. And I told him, I said, I knew from the opening shot, and I'm not giving anything away. It's a shot of just the actor. It's just his face. The biggest close-up in the world. And I was like, just the way that looked, I was in completely. The established mood, atmosphere, all of that. And I got that from this, and I was just totally enthralled. You know, and it didn't matter how long it went on. That movie could have been 5 hours long, and I would have been invested in it for me.
Because, you know, something that's interesting about The Shining, Bill, is it's actually, because it's Kubrick and because Kubrick had something of a reputation, I mean, he was very, you know, I'm sorry, my cat is scooping her litter, so I'm really annoyed by that, but anyway.
I thought I heard that.
But in any case, you know, he'd done Doctor Strangelove, Clockwork Orange, which is my favorite of his. I think Barry Lyndon was his previous film prior to The Shining,
which I still haven't seen. But I love Full Metal Jacket, which came several years later. That's my favorite Kubrick film.
Yeah, and something about him was that he would take, like, it would be years between movies for him because he was so, like, part of it was because he was such a notoriously meticulous, some would say obsessive filmmaker, like really down to the minutiae of things.
He would ask for so many takes. I know on set, Scatman Crothers, he actually broke it down in tears. He's like, Mr. Kubrick, just tell me what you want. And that's when Jack Nicholson went up to him and he said, you know, he pulled Kubrick aside. He's like, he's an old man, you know, like give him a break kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
Actually, that's one of the point of contentions with the film is like who everybody goes, oh, Kubrick. And Nicholson and Duvall both said it was the toughest film of their careers. You know, Duvall, you know, she ended up like having a breakdown. And again, she was asked to do 8 million takes of things. And I think Kubrick wanted her to break down, which is, you know, what he got. But, you know, they went through hell. I mean, every actor gave their all in it. So I never look at it specifically as a Kubrick film. Look at it as a Kubrick interpretation of a Stephen King novel inhabited by actors who really brought it. because Nicholson just he owned that role, you know, regardless of how you feel about it.
Yeah, you know something, Bill? Something I read, I was doing the Wikipedia page earlier today. I did see something, and I can't attribute the source, but it was a quote, I think from Kubrick, saying that he told the crew and the other cast not to sympathize with or help out Shelley Duvall in particular
I believe it.
for her character. And I was just like, okay, that backs up some of the stuff that you can see in the little short film that Vivian Kubrick
Yeah.
filmed of the behind the scenes footage, because there's a scene where Kubrick is like pretty much close to yelling at Shelley Duvall at one point. And I'm like, God, I'm sort of like, damn, man.
Yeah, he wanted I think, you know, what he wanted, I don't know. I'm always wondering. I want to know how Polanski got a Johnny to oh, whoa, no, The Possession. He didn't direct The Possession,
Oh,
1981.
Zulawski.
Yeah, thank you very
Zulawski.
much. Jeez, thank you for pardon the slip up. Cuz like she had to go to a hospital after that, you know. And you look at Torquemada, oh my God, Torquemada.
Torquemada,
You
yeah.
know, Lance Henriksen, he you know, he had to take like a year off after that. His performance is insane in that, you know. And I wonder how, you know, Stuart Gordon got him to do what he did. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, what do you think, Bill? Because you wrote a really good article, I think it was last year sometime, about sort of giving Shelley Duvall, who plays Wendy Torrance, her due, whereas
Yes.
she's often been many critics, even people who like the film, consider her either her performance or just the fact that it's Shelley Duvall, they think she's miscast or whatever. They don't give her much credit.
And they're wrong. They're all wrong. Yeah, I wrote an article called The Case for Wendy Torrance, which you could find on CrestPalaceProductions.com. And, you know, a lot of people, oh, all she does is scream and whine and she doesn't do anything. I mean, she saves her son. You know, she offers herself up. You know, she's like, she does the best that she can. And if you really watch, and I've watched this movie like a gazillion times, and I think the point is, because it's like, what, day three, things start falling apart.
Oh, it's early,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's and a lot of people are like, oh, it's too short of a time for people to go crazy. The point is that they were all crazy before they got there. And if I'm the Overlook Hotel and these crazy family comes in, I would be sucking off of that energy like mad. And it's like, so it doesn't have to take a long time. They're already nuts. She's nuts. You know, she's trying to say, oh, it was just a simple thing. You know, he wouldn't touch Danny again. You know, because he pulled his arm out of his socket. You know,
Yeah,
that,
broke his arm, yeah.
yeah, it won't happen again. You know, he's okay. Like, she's delusional. You know, she's trying to keep the family together, be the good wife thing, be the good mom. Her son's nuts. He's talking to his fucking finger. You know, it's like, you know, Tony. You know, Tony's a little boy that lives in my mouth. Okay, that's great, kid. You know, your dad's bonkers. Oh, I'm working on a new writing project. It's like, yeah, sure you are, buddy. I mean, he has no clue what he's doing. That's why he's a dull boy, because he's like, he has no idea. He goes to this cabin in the woods type of thing, and he's got nothing. And he's like, you know, so he's bored out of his gourd because he's already nuts. He has issues. He lost his teaching job. He's an abusive father, though he doesn't want to be. And it's just one, it's a, they're in a downward spiral on the car ride up, all three of them in a car. They're not communicating well. You know, it's just like, it's a disaster. So once they get to the hotel, it's like, it's already begun.
You know, what's interesting, Bill, is that it's kind of, and this is from the novel as well. It is kind of a last ditch effort for Jack to kind of sort of retain his dignity and his manhood after being kind of
Absolutely.
disgraced. And something that I like, something that's in the miniseries version of it, that's also in the novel, is there's an extra wrinkle in that at one point he, as a professor, he beats up a student
Yes,
for
yes.
slashing his car tire. So there's even more.
Shit, I would have done that. You know, like, fuck, man.
Yeah, exactly. There's like all this messed up dysfunctional stuff happening, and you bring up a good point, because I can see, even though I haven't watched The Shining and the Kubrick film in many years, it's just the fact that I can see the suppression of Shelley Duvall's character a lot more. She's tamping down while Jack kind of just goes and does Jack, basically, and Danny does Danny. She's trying to be a good mother, but yeah, my kid's a little off, so I'm trying to do the best I can. And here we are in this huge, basically, dollhouse kind of place, miles away from everybody. We're isolated. It is kind of a pressure cooker type situation, you know.
Yeah, if things aren't going to work, they're just going to get worse. And one of the things too that I think no one's some people haven't brought it up, but I think it's there and it bothers me as well, is, you know, you're used to seeing a Hollywood movie with the most attractive people on a planet. And a lot of people don't see Shelley Duvall as being attractive, although people forget that she began life as a model.
She was attractive back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, you know, like she didn't appear to be attractive. She seemed to be like a mom, like just like, you know, just being a mom. You know, and that's what I like to me, you know, that she was real. She hooked up with this guy who's like not right. You know, he just keeps getting very wrong. Even though he tries, he's a fucking disaster. And so I liked it. It was this little dysfunctional family. And, you know, going back to that little vignette from Kubrick's daughter, I wish she had filmed how they approached Danny Lloyd, who played Dan the character Danny, because he never knew it was a horror movie. So it's like, how the hell did you do all of this shit with this kid? It's like, you know, I saw somebody they took on YouTube. They did this cut and they showed like they made a trailer showing The Shining as like a father trying to connect with his son kind of movie, like a family film. And it's like, shit, they made it work. You know, I thought that was pretty cool. And but it's like, how did they treat him on set to make him like not be scared? You know,
You know, it's interesting, Bill. There's another behind the scenes anecdote for another Stephen King film, Pet Sematary, where apparently Mary Lambert was talking to Miko Hughes, who played the son, like the really young son age in that movie. And I think it was like she had to kind of convince him that, because that kid's actually doing violent stuff to people in that movie, unlike Danny, who's relatively innocent. But you know, she had to say, oh, this is not real, this is just a game, kind of. So I think that's how a lot of directors might couch that more intense stuff to younger actors, just because I'm sure they're smart, but they're probably not quite grasping the whole picture of things. So yeah.
Oh yeah. And Joe Turkel, man, I'm sorry, I just have to say this. He will be 96 in friggin' holy crap. Yeah, and like how old is he? I can't fucking add for shit, man. I'm such a 92. He'll be 92. And it's interesting because he's like representative of the hotel. You know, as like the head spirit, so to speak, and just helping Jack un become even more undone, and I just still wonder how, I don't know how they did it with little Danny. I'm sorry, man. I sorry, that was like a bad segue. That wasn't even a segue. I have no idea where my head went.
Here's something, Bill. I love Joe Turkle as well, and of course, like the two films that, I mean, he's done other stuff, of course, but
Oh yeah.
the two films he'll forever be remembered for are The Shining and
Blade Runner.
as Tyrell in Blade Runner. And he is so fantastic in both films. Like, for as much as I don't like Kubrick's Shining, and believe me, I've watched it probably over a half dozen times over the years trying to like it, there are certain things that I do like about it, and he is one of them. Because, and going back to what you said, a little subtext there, Bill, is kind of the fact that the ghosts don't come out in big poltergeisty kind of fashion in this film right away. They're kind of it's kind of drawn out. And right there you have Joe Turkel. He's dressed traditionally as like a old school bartender. He's very ingratiating, but he's a ghost. He's a figment of the imagination. But he's just like, oh, just have a drink. Oh, your money's no good here. You just keep drinking, kind of thing. You know, what could, what could possibly go wrong? Oh, you're annoyed with your wife. Oh, you can't live with them. You can't live without them. You know, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of piling on all of this, piling on to Jack's psychosis just through this sequence.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see how Jack interacts with him because the character Jack, he comes off as like being like a guy who's almost like childish when he's interacting with another adult male. He's acting like a silly guy at the bar, a foolish guy, not like a guy who has his shit together, who's a man. And so, and which only adds to the whole, element of lost manhood with him.
Well, kind of like an element of immaturity too, maybe. It's like, oh, he can't own up to, maybe he's avoiding, or he can't own up to being a father, so he kind of reverts back to this sort of childish demeanor, maybe.
Yeah, and he wants, he's like, hey man, I just grabbed him, It's like, what's the big deal, And it's like, he's looking for somebody else to like justify his negative action,
Yeah, kind of like the bartender, what is often the role of the bartender is just to kind of say,
Therapist.
to validate. It's like, oh yeah, I would have done the same thing, even though it's like, just keep drinking, give me a good tip kind of thing. You know,
Yeah.
it's,
But why don't you like the movie, man? Why don't you like it?
Bill, I go back to a quote that I think I saw someone, it was like a user comment on IMDb from years ago, and it's a big problem, and it's not the fault of the actors, but they said, you can't picture Jack Nicholson doing anything with Shelley Duvall to create little Danny. And I still feel that that's the case. I feel like it's this sharp contrast of actors that don't really interlock. And for me, in granted, that's a superficial on a superficial level, that kind of totally dashes the rest of the film, or at least the rest of the film is kind of an uphill climb from there for me, because I can't buy into this family unit as even a facsimile of a family.
Wow. See, I actually can. And I think it's because Jack is so immature and she has an immaturity level to her as well. And how old's Danny in the film? Like, what, eight?
Probably
Seven?
something like that,
Yeah. Obviously, they haven't had another child. Who knows how they were when they first met, like all those years ago? How different. Because it's funny, you look at early pictures of Shelley Duvall and how she appeared in The Shining, and there is a difference as well. And it was just like a mismatch that, I know couples that are like, you look at them and you're like, what the hell? How the hell did this happen? Kind of thing, So that never even crossed my mind. I think maybe they were attracted by each other's weaknesses. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, all that to say, it's that I often see people walking around holding hands, and I'm just like, really? You too, kind of. And it's like I get it. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And sometimes I'm like, what does my girlfriend see in me? And I'm just glad she sees whatever she does in me. So maybe there's a bit of the Jack and Wendy dynamic going on there as well.
Well,
But
you two are adorable together, and I know Audrey loves you because you love skinny puppies. So there it is.
that's true, and she likes dogs, so there we go. But you know, Bill, the other big thing, and it's the big old elephant in the room, is that I think Jack Nicholson goes way over the top in a way that's beyond what it seems like. You were talking about how he's goofing off at the bar, kind of. I think it's just Jack playing Jack. Playing Jack Nicholson, that is, not Jack Torrance. I feel like he's just, near the end, it's almost more unintentionally funny than it is frightening when he's sort of taunting Shelley Duvall as he walks slowly up the steps and she's waving the bat and everything.
Yeah, but I think Kubrick told Jack to go all out. You know, from the you know, from the beginning, just be bonkers. I mean, the guy, he's just a nut. He's just a fucking lunatic. And you know, I've known people like that, and I've stayed away from them. You know, and I think that's another reason why I think their marriage is perfect between him and Wendy, because who knows, when Wendy might have been the homely girl who wasn't really getting dates and all. And this guy shows interest in her. He's a little weird, but hey, so what? And next thing you know, they got a kid, and then, you know, and all this shit happens, and then they're, you know, she's fighting for her life in a fucking hotel.
Yeah, I can see that.
I you
Yeah.
know, and I mean, and I'll be honest. I mean, if I love a movie, I'll justify it any way I can. But the thing is, I never saw any of those elements as being an issue. I was
Okay.
just like right from the beginning, I was like, you know, what, day three, he's like staring out the window, practically drooling, like, bleh, you know, and it's like, man, I knew he was nuts. He's been nuts all along, and it's like, the hotel wasn't getting to him. He was getting to the hotel, and that's
Oh,
why everything came alive. That's it, man. That's my story, baby.
good thesis, Bill. Good.
Yeah, that's my next paper.
I was gonna say I smell another article on the horizon there. Yeah.
Well, Jack Nicholson's from New Jersey, so you know I gotta like support the home team, man.
Here's the thing, though, Bill. Have you ever seen a movie that he did? Sean Penn directed it from the early 2000s called The Pledge.
He was that where he promises to get the woman's kid or something.
Yeah, it's like a child's been murdered, and he makes a promise to the mother that he'll find who killed the
Yeah, I
child.
hated that movie.
Are you kidding me? Oh my God, that's one of my favorite Jack Nicholson performances.
I'm not, it's not about his performance, it's about the story. It's about how it went, like he became too undone, too crazy, too quickly in that situation at the end when he's like walking around muttering to himself and all, and I was like, that's too fast. It just didn't, I just didn't feel genuine to me. It
All right,
didn't,
Bill. All
his
right, Bill. This
performance
is
was excellent, but I just
well,
thought,
because it's Jack restrained for a change. Yeah.
no, I loved it. I mean, his performance was great, but I just thought like the way they wrote it in the script, I was like, nah, I don't like him being that undone that quickly. And like, it's not like he's upset. He goes right to like friggin' Bonkersville, you know, and it's like, I don't know about that.
This is really interesting, Bill, because this is kind of a paradox here. Because I feel like his character in that, if you would replace his performance in The Shining with his performance in The Pledge, I probably would have bought into The Shining a lot more, and I probably would have liked it more because I didn't see it as him going from 0 to 100 with his obsession. I saw, and it's been a while since I've watched that one too, so maybe if I rewatch it, that might seem different to me. But I was just like, that's kind of like, oh, that's the Jack that I would have wanted to play Jack Torrance, because there is that, to me, it felt like a more gradual kind of obsessive unraveling of the character. And to me, that would have worked, especially with the way Kubrick sort of does it as a 2.5 hour epic, kind of.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but that's a your cat scratching in a box, and Cheryl Ann is putting things away. So it's
We're a
like this.
match set tonight, Bill.
Yeah, it's like the list is perfect for The Shining, right?
That
What was that sound? Was that a cat or a woman, or was it a cat woman? But anyway,
Yeah.
yeah. But like even the beginning, the interview, you know, with Ullman, you know, played by a great Barry Nelson. You know, like he's sitting there, and I'm like, this guy is not right. You know, it's like I'm watching it, like with his hair, and you know, it's just like he's playing a part, and they're making a big damn mistake, man.
You know what? Here's okay, Bill. This is a really interesting conversation, so I'm glad we're talking about this movie.
I'm glad we are too, Johnny.
for very different reasons,
Yeah. I have a
but
headache already. Go
that's me using my super, my shining powers on you, Bill.
Oh, Christ.
The one scene that I actually really like in the Kubrick film is the interview scene.
Oh, I love it. No, I
But
love
I
that's one of my favorites too, but it's like you see Jack, like he's like hiding his, who he really is behind a smile, because we only see the interview, then him reacting with his wife and son in the car going up, and it's like, this guy's nuts. He's nuts.
Well, he is kind of he goes from seeming, very kind of enthusiastic in the interview to kind of being more withdrawn in during that car ride. That's yeah.
Yeah, he's a guy who can allow himself to have lucid moments, but then, and it's like he's just keeping his own wolf at bay. Jack was in the movie Wolf, by the way. Sorry, just had to. That was a little
Oh.
swish. Go ahead.
But the thing I like about that, and the thing I like about that interview scene is, to me, the way it's kind of drawn out for I don't know how long, if it's, 7 or 8 minutes in total, or if it's shorter than that, but it goes on for a little bit. And to me, I felt it felt very authentic to me. It felt like, okay, here's a guy who's actually trying to put on that face they tell you to put on during an interview, like be kind of enthusiastic, be kind of a go-getter, kind of ingratiate yourself. The way he st stands up from his seat with his coffee when Bill Watson
How do you
enters the
do?
room, yeah,
How
and the
do you
way,
do is still in vogue in 1980.
yeah, exactly. And I mean, I kind of like that. It is a bit. It does seem a little bit silly, but that's like, to me, that's the mark of a guy who really wants to make the best possible impression because he's out of options.
True.
This is his contingency plan.
True, but I still had this like inclination, like when I first watched the film, it's like this guy is off. And the beautiful thing is, and people never equate these, and it really bothers me, is his interview mirrors the interview that Wendy has with the doctor, played by
Oh,
Ann
well,
Jackson.
say more, Bill. Yeah.
Well, Ann Jackson's looking at her like, what the hell is wrong with you, lady? Well, Jack grabbed him, like he would do a million, like any father would do a million times. And, well, he pulled a little too hard that day, and but he hasn't touched a drop since he hurt him. And she's just looking at him like, what the fuck is wrong with you, lady? Like, what,
Oh, well.
your kids, well, she didn't, what, the little boy talk, did she tell? Yeah, she asked him where does Tony hide and all of that stuff, and she's like, this whole family's crazy. So we already know going in that they're already nuts. So when they get to the Overlook, it's just like we're nuts in a nut house, and this house is, friggin' has this history, has this haunting history, has this horror history, and it just, as soon as they step in the door, it just like sucks that up. Like Jack would take a drink at a bar, man. He would just be, where's that scotch? Boom, gone. Bourbon, actually, So that's, I'm like, this movie is just phenomenal to me. And that's why I hated the book so much, because I'm like, the book is dull. I wanted everybody to be killed. It's too long. I always thought Stephen King should dig up Kubrick's bones and kiss them and apologize and thank him for making his shit book into something amazing.
Oh yeah, we have serious heavy disagreement here, Bill.
That's fine. I don't care. I don't care at all.
To go back a bit, I am sympathizing more with Shelley Duvall, and her rendition of the character, the more you talk about it. So for what it's worth, because she has sort of a sad humor about her too.
Oh, absolutely. And she looks so dorky. She's a dork. That outfit when the doctor comes, like what the hell is that? It's like she just got off a Petticoat Junction or friggin' Hee-Haw.
I think I always thought of her kind of as her outfits kind of like as something out of Curious George, the man with the yellow hat,
Oh my
kind of.
God. Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, but she's got this like sad laugh about her. It's like
Yeah.
she's bringing up these like sad things, and she's trying to. And
Just like
it's
Jack in his interview, faking it, she's faking it with the doctor. And she's
well, and
faking
what.
it with her son.
Well, and it's a sort of like a delusion. It's like, yeah, well, if we convince ourselves, if we tell ourselves that stuff is okay, even if it's not, even no matter how horrible it gets, we'll probably still have a belief in some of that, that it is okay, even though it's really far from okay. So, Bill.
I don't know, Johnny, tell me.
Yeah, I think our big divergence here is the fact that you're cool with the fact that following your logic, the family had tons of issues, and the issue and they were already crazy. The hotel made them crazier. I personally like the more human aspect of the how it was rendered in the miniseries, which was in 97.
The miniseries was great. Steven Weber, always loved him.
Oh, you saw it?
Oh, fuck yeah, I saw it. Read the book, saw the movie, saw the
Okay.
miniseries, bought the lunchbox, all that shit.
I want the
Yeah,
lunchbox.
screw you, you ain't getting one now. I want the lunchbox for a movie I don't really like. Eat shit, Johnny Numb, you ain't getting nothing.
I'll beat you with a thermos, Bill.
You probably would, you sick bastard.
I'll unscrew the cap and throw hot soup in your face. Just kidding. It's not tomato soup, it's blood soup, Bill, from the
Oh,
elevators.
okay, dude, I'll drink that down.
And I think here's the thing that I liked was that, A, I felt that the family in the miniseries, as they were cast, was more convincing as a family. And this is just my personal preference. I liked that there was a build up to the insanity in that version, which I thought worked for that
No,
version.
they
That's
both work to me. They
okay. All
both work.
right. All right.
I like Steven Weber and his family being like, for the most part normal, and then, the turn happened. And that usually happens in every damn horror movie. There's like a family,
Yeah.
everything's fine, and then something happens and they come undone. This was awesome to see a family that's fucking nuts, and they go into a place that's nuts, and the nuts just multiply. It's awesome. It's like Trouble with Tribbles, man. It was like they're crazy. They go into a crazy place. Things get crazier in like record time. I was like, this is awesome. So I loved it for that because you don't see it elsewhere. How many other movies, horror movies, can you name where there's a crazy family and something becomes crazier because of them like that? They're not driven crazy. They're already nuts, and it just
Well,
fuels the fire.
usually when we have a movie like that, the big twist at the end is that they were crazy all along, but we don't know it until the very end. Like there's something that's flipped, and that's the only other time we really see that. Yeah.
And that's when the beauty of it is we find out that Wendy is no longer under the spell of Jack, that she's coming down, she's like, I have to take action. She's freaking out, and everybody's talking about, oh, she's whining, she's crying, this and that. She's trying to come up with a plan through all of this emotion to put it aside to save her kid. Where are we gonna go? What can we do? Get in the bathroom, locks the bathroom, she tries to get out her window. I can't get out. Son, go, get out, run. And she's taking action as a mother. She's not like, oh, daddy's gonna be okay, he's just on a binge. She's like, holy shit, things are really wrong, and she just like wakes up.
Yeah, and I mean, it's
I'm gonna
kind of like
fight for
when.
this all the way, man.
Well, I know you will, Bill. And to me, when you're saying it goes to this and it goes to these places in record time, what do you think? To diverge here again, what do you think of the pacing of the film? Because that's another thing that I have to put it in perspective. The miniseries, I looked it up, is 4.5 hours long. Kubrick's film is 2 hours and 24 minutes long. Kubrick's film feels like the longer sit to me because of the way he did it.
Johnny, there's some movies where that means nothing to me. Some movies I feel it, and
Okay.
again, because of the atmosphere and all, it's the same with Alien. Alien's like my favorite, sci-fi
Sure.
horror. And even Ridley Scott said, hey, nothing happens for the first 40 minutes. I could give a shit. I love it. I am in it. I'm feeling it. I'm loving it. I'm fully invested emotionally, visually. It's just, I'm in. And it was the same with this film. It didn't feel long to me. It just felt like, just moving at a really, a great pace for me because I loved it. If I don't love something, yeah, it's going to feel like a, mile long, but it didn't. And, with music from Wendy Carlos and Rachel Elkind, it was just like it just, I don't know, it just had me, I don't want to say on the edge of my seat, that's so cliche, but it just had me amped. I was amped. I was going to go crazy, Johnny, just like Jack.
So basically, the movie kind of conjured up a feeling in you that kind of propelled you through the rest of it in a way, I guess, like the best movies kind of do.
Yeah, like, you know, I love Starship Troopers. I know a lot of people think it's a joke. It's Takashi Miike's favorite film, by the way. As soon as I
He's
saw that, I felt really good. That's
a smart man,
yes,
yeah.
he is. That's like what, I don't know, three hours long. It feels like 3 hours, but I love it for three. I didn't want the movie to end.
Well, you know, and
I just
here's
loved
here.
it.
Yeah, I mean, here's like a comparison, and my favorite movie of 2019 was Dragged Across Concrete. That thing was almost
Loved
two
it.
hours and 40 minutes long, and that thing did not it did not drag at all for me during that whole time.
Even though you were dragged across concrete. No, it didn't. That movie was fantastic. It was compelling. It was riveting. You had intriguing characters
Yeah.
that you could love hate at the same time all the way around. And a great messed up story. Thanks, you know, Mr. Zahler again. And
Right.
yeah, that's another one. I could sit there and I could watch that right now, and I wouldn't. I have a movie right now that I dread watching. Hard to Be a God. I think it was a friggin' science fiction film from 2015. It's 3 hours long, and I'm like, I don't want to watch this. That's
Okay.
too much time. For all I know, I could put it on and I could hopefully become immersed in it and sit there and not even know 3 hours went by. But
Yeah, I mean,
it
like,
depends on the material.
yeah. For me, I think I Saw the Devil is probably comparable to the length of The Shining, and that's a movie that doesn't feel as long as it is to me because it's constantly moving towards something. So
Yes, exactly. Exactly. This clash.
and to me, with the Shining, I just feel like it starts off kind of okay. That interview scene is interesting. Family gets to the hotel. Okay, they're getting the lay of the land. They're going through that super cool hedge maze, and then it kind of flattens out for me. And this is just me, people.
No, it's fine.
But I was just like, is something gonna happen soon or at all? The scenes of Jack throwing a tennis ball against the wall were kind of like, I know he's bored. He's trying to write something, but he's really not because he doesn't have the discipline. He's a failure, basically. This is his last resort, and he's going crazy. But I didn't need all those scenes of him just kind of looking crazily at the camera or just doing not much. In general, I think the film dragged a lot for me, and
Yeah, it didn't for me though. It's weird how, yeah, for me, not at all. I sit and watch it. I never fast forward through anything. I just soak it up.
I've seriously, it is a movie that's like Halloween. It's like I keep meaning to give it another watch and thinking like, okay, maybe after the 20th time it'll click with me finally, and I'll see the movie that everybody else is seeing. But because
Nah. Halloween won't, man. Don't do it. Halloween won't. I tried again and it just doesn't work.
I think I'm done with that one. But I
Yeah,
mean,
highly
with the sh
overrated.
yeah I well, we did a show on it a while back. But yeah, but yeah, so I was kind of disappointed because I didn't feel like the runtime was justified by what happens in the movie. It seemed like he was kind of twiddling his thumbs a bit, especially with that Steadicam stuff of the kid on the big wheel. I'm like, it's not just something to do like one loop around the main living space. He does it like I feel two or three times, and I'm kind of like, okay, we get it. It's cool. You got a new toy.
Nah, to me it was a suspense build though.
To what though?
To what?
To what, Bill?
Every
To
time I
what?
step into a hotel and I look down a long corridor, I know what I'm going to see down there. It's going to be those two creepy chicks.
So what do you think about the twins?
What do I think about twins?
What do you think about them as the characters in the movie, as characters in the movie?
Well, they want to play with Danny forever and ever.
In
They're
a certain
creepy.
well, in a certain way, I guess you could see that as a bit of foreshadowing kind of the Asian cinema craze where it's all about like the creepy kids too.
Well, you know, well, Lisa and Louise Burns, you know, played their part and to have that flash scene where they're all like, you know, hacked to death thanks to Mr. Grady, their dad.
That is an effective moment because Danny's seeing that in his mind's eye.
Yeah, Philip Stone played a great part as Grady. That whole bathroom scene, holy crap, that red and white bathroom scene. Oh,
That is another good one.
I love it. I love it. And the whole, I always wanted that room 237 bathroom. I always want, like, if I like hit the lottery, man, and I have the house made, yeah, here's Kubrick's The Shining. I want that exact same bathroom. Don't deviate from it. I want those colors. I want all of it, baby. All of it.
Well, Bill, this brings up, you're talking about color. I cannot not bring up this movie and how we both, I think we both agree with this, is that Room 237 is a piece of shit, that documentary.
I stopped watching it. I took the DVD out of the player. I flung it across the room. I wanted to murder those people. There was only one person with a brain in that whole bunch who could actually talk about theme, symbolic relations. You know, you and I both come from a literary background, and we've been, trained in literary criticism, and that's fantastic for looking at, through lines, thematic values, and everything else. And they're prevalent in the whole movie, but these guys were—they were just like idiots off the street pulling shit out of their ass. You know, the one guy went, "Oh yeah, Kubrick directed the moon landing." I was like, "This person needs to be bludgeoned to death right now." You know, and it was just like, "What are you, stupid?" And they were—it was idiotic, and it was just really such a major disappointment because I hoped to learn so much, and I didn't learn a thing.
Yeah, you know what's interesting, Bill? And I actually fished out my review that I sent to you, like it was back in 2012 or 2013, and it just brought to mind, like, you know the, and I'm gonna get on my soapbox kind of, you know the shift in news reporting and media over kind of the last decade, and I'm not gonna name names, but sort of like, one thing is there's 24/7 cable news. There's so many websites that are mirroring that. There's a constant bludgeon of stuff coming at you. And the whole muddiness of the, quote unquote fake news media. And, I'm not saying I agree with that, but just the fact that there's so much junk out there. And it's harder and harder to make an educated, rational assessment of things because so much rests on hype and exaggeration. And I feel like Room 237, that movie, kind of contributes to this whole fucking bullshit atmosphere that we're dealing with now.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. I was so disappointed in that. It was so upsetting to me because I really thought this would be really cool, a great treat, a great dive into a movie that's loaded with craziness because the hotel's crazy. You can even see as you watch it, there's people like walking behind a wall, there's a window, and they just disappear. And it's like, the room doors don't match up. The entrance to the maze changes three times. The whole place is off and crazy. You know, that's why I don't even look at a goofs list for this because yeah, there's goofs in it all over. One, because Kubrick does 8 million takes, but because it's like it didn't. And I knew Kubrick was like, it doesn't matter because you see things move and stuff, and it's like it doesn't matter because this whole place is everybody's nuts. Nothing adds up. And that's what he was going for, and I loved it. But the Room 237 documentary, if you want to call, I call it a mockumentary because it is a mock. It's a joke. It was just awful on every level. I hate it.
And I went into that, Bill, to thinking to myself, okay, knowing the premise, I was like, maybe some insight on this will help sway my opinion more toward the favorable with the Kubrick film. And it actually, if anything, I think it made the film look worse to me because, okay, you have these fucking crackpots out here, and someone's letting them off their leash to spew this totally asinine, in most cases, bullshit because they're hung up on, oh man, it was terrible.
Oh yeah, absolutely horrible, terrible. But
Yeah, Bill, what do you think of, do you have any thoughts about The Shining, The Shining's influence over popular culture at all, like a parody and satire and anything
oh
like that?
God, Red Rum is like became a catchphrase that still hasn't gone anywhere. People quote the film quite often. I think it's just I don't know. I think a lot some horror filmmakers try to mimic a lot of Kubrick's style. He has these long perspective shots on occasion. You see that rarely though in horror because horror is usually intimate and keeping things up close. But the big wheel. There's always like any. I've seen the whole parodies on the two girls in the hallway, a million times over. So I just think that keeps rolling. What about you, man?
There were a couple things that I thought were interesting and worthy of mention, just that I just thought of off the top of my head. One of the early Simpsons Halloween episodes featured a parody of the. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them. What do I have, like 30 of them now?
Well, there's like 30 seasons of the show, so there's
Jesus
probably
Christmas,
about
30 of
30.
them.
It just insists on going. But yeah, it's kind of funny because I think it was a good segment because of the way the writers of the show bring these characters together to sort of inhabit. Corollary characters like Groundskeeper Willie becomes the Halloran surrogate. Mr. Burns is like the Ullman surrogate. Oh, that's strange. The blood usually gets off on the third floor. Yeah.
That was very good, Johnny. I like that.
But that was a really great. I thought that was a really great send up in like 8 or 10 minutes of the whole movie, and Homer has no beer, so he goes crazy and wants to kill his family. So,
Love it.
but one of the you probably know this, but Spielberg was friends with Kubrick. I totally forgot about this because the movie is otherwise pretty terrible. But Ready Player One has a whole homage to The Overlook in it.
Nice.
It's presented as one of the levels in this, VR game that the characters are playing. And I got to admit, for I thought it was a cool touch, and they kind of really invest with kind of like the Easter eggs of the characters and stuff like that. That whole movie is kind of rotten with pop culture references that are kind of pointless, but I thought the nod to The Shining was pretty well done in that one.
That's cool. That's
And
cool.
Bill, have you seen The Chickening?
No. Holy crap. Sounds like I'm going to YouTube right now.
It's the last homage I'm going to mention because I watched it years ago. It's a 5-minute short. I don't know if it's on YouTube, but if you can find it someplace, find it. I have not laughed as hard. It's one of the hardest times I've laughed in my life
Oh, I see it on here, man.
watching this. And apparently, I was going through a Letterboxd today, and some of the reviews were noting that it played before Green Room at the premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival a couple years back.
Jeez.
And I think that's kind of perfect, though people are like saying it's like it's like cancer in film form or something like that. It's really, really harsh stuff on The Chickening, but I remembered watching it and just totally cracking up at the whole thing. It was
Oh
just
man.
it was just crazy. If you
I'm watching it later, man.
Yeah, if you like that short film Kung Fury, or if you like the Astron 6 guys, I would recommend finding a way to see The Chickening because it's that same kind of tone of humor, I would say.
Yeah, well,
So,
they're retired now, man, right?
yeah, I guess they are because they did that movie The Void, but it was kind of they were split up from the collective, so yeah.
Yeah, but
They did some good stuff. Manborg's fucking hysterical, yeah.
yeah, I think I gave you that one, didn't
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I like their Giallo take. That was
Oh,
good.
the editor was
Yeah,
fantastic,
the
yeah.
editor. Yeah, that was a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about The Shining all day and all night, I guess. But one little thing I think is interesting. Again, I don't know if this is true, because when you have an iconic movie like this, a whole bunch of stories come out. But the whole thing with Danny moving his finger as Tony,
Yeah.
apparently he developed that when he was in the audition,
Oh.
and he just did that, and Kubrick loved it, and like, yeah, we're gonna go with that. And I think. And I was thinking, that's probably true, because if I was a little kid actor like him, he wanted to talk to somebody, so he just so he was just playing off, and it worked. So I think that's really cool.
Well, you know, and that is a good point, Bill, because that early scene in their apartment, Danny says something to Wendy about like, yeah, she asks if she's excited to go to this hotel, and he's like, yeah, I guess so. There's hardly anyone to play with around here. And then Wendy brings up Tony, so it's kind of like this weird, again, it's that sad kind of resigned acknowledgement. It's like, oh, my kid doesn't have any friends, my husband's crazy, I'm
I'm
stuck in the I'm,
crazy. We're all
yeah
crazy.
I'm stuck in the middle of this this thing. So yeah, that is a good point.
Stuck in the middle with you.
Hey Bill, you've been listening to KBLLY's Super Swingin' Sounds of the 80s. Yeah.
Stephen Wright, come on our show, man. Come on our show. Right from Sheboygan to Pennsylvania. Come on down, bud.
Billy, I think you have some scream outs to give
Okay.
before walking through the hedge maze
Okay, well, here we
and
go.
freezing to death in the winter.
Oh my God. So here's wonderful souls you could follow on Twitter. I'll give you their Twitter handle, all that fun stuff, after I give you their name if they have one. Scott James Kyle, who's that? That is Scott, two T's, capital J, Kyle, one. Actor, trust me, he played Bobby. Outlander, he played Ross. The jockey, he played Stu. Angel Share, Clancy. Singing, I'm no a Billy. He's a Tim. He played Billy, the Stage Award for Acting Excellence, and he's out of the UK. He does a lot of wonderful things with children and theater, so that's great. You could follow him on his website at scottkyle.co.uk. Wonderful person and actor. David Murdoch Art. He's an independent artist and writer, and he's a creative director for I. And this is also a Twitter handle. Ink Itzy, INCITZY. He has a new game coming out based on his Lucas comic book series, which is amazing. And I've seen preliminary stuff, and I think this game's going to crush it. Muse, who's she? She is Halo Girl 22, co-hostess of Scary Horror Cast with Monster Mash Ken, who's part of the Strange Pod Network. The problem with this world is that too many mouths are open while too many eyes remain closed.
Yes.
And they're out of Michigan, near Sheboygan, I'm sure. Sorry, I had to do that. Robert W. Scott 8, again, two T's. Hi there. I'm a progressive vlogger, composer for ASCAP, science fiction horror author, gamer, and crab. Host of the new show, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 11 p.m. He's out of Luray, Virginia, and you could follow him on his YouTube channel. Tina Scott. I love Tina Scott. She's a sweetheart. Tina underscore Scott, again, two T's. I didn't realize it was Scott Knight. 95. She's a wife and mother of Gemini. She's a horror movie fan. She lives in the WWE. She's into all cool stuff. She's out of Detroit, Michigan. Again, what's up with this? Everybody's near. How close is that to Sheboygan? And you can follow her on Instagram.com at Radiant by Tina. WRIX2, artist and inventor, created the model of the human thought process, as well as fostering many technical breakthroughs. To go to more get more info, go to WRIX2 at DeviantArt.com. He's out of Texas. Awesome soul. VHS Revival. A retro movie site bringing you reviews, articles, and features. We pride ourselves on producing quality ad-free material for passionate movie fans. Like us, Johnny.
Yay.
And they're out of Manchester, England, known for its incredible music. And you can find them at VHSRevival.com. Ms. Death, who is she? That's DeathZombie_girl. The original Ms. Death, I love writing movies. I love writing movies, superheroes, anything sci-fi, The Walking Dead, horror, and the great outdoors. Warning, will tweet whatever is on my mind. Sarah, who's Sarah? Johnny knows who this is. Up
oh,
North
yeah.
Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
People annoy me greatly. You I can handle. Horror, paranormal, and nature is my bag. Green Bay Packers for life. Sorry they didn't continue on to the Super Bowl this year. I'm not interested, so please don't bother. She is phenomenal, and she's absolutely beautiful.
Lots of fun to talk with her.
Oh,
yeah.
She's just great. Her wit, oh, my God.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I wish she'd write an article for Crash Palace.
Oh, bring it.
Yeah, Sarah, it's a hint to you. And finally, an author out of Florida, wonderful person, great smile, Eddie J. Morales. You could find him at Morales_EJ, author of Dreaded Tales, a short horror story collection, supernatural slasher, paranormal, zombies, loves all that. And he also loves, oh my gosh, he's followed by Keith Allen Duh, D-U-H, of Z Nation, if you didn't know. And you could follow him at Eddie Jose Morales.weebly.com. And that's our scream outs for this week, Johnny.
Nice, Bill. Nice. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies, haha. And you can also find my writing over at CrashPalaceProductions.com.
Awesome. And I am Billy Crash. You could find me on Twitter at Crash Palace and at CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and more. The Last Knock is also on Spotify as well as iTunes. And if you're into erotic crime thrillers, you could follow me at Noir Kink. And that's it, Johnny. I mean, that's I've bashed through the door with my axe. Apparently, Jack Nicholson was a volunteer fireman. But they still used the wrong, he still used the wrong end. Like, you're supposed to use that pick point to punch a hole through the door. I don't know what the fuck, but.
It's okay, Billy. He heard it on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to get my little beetle and blow out of here, man.
I'm just going to wear my Apollo 11 sweater for the rest of the night because it's cold.
Take the Sidewinder, Johnny, if it's too cold. Take the Sidewinder.
I'm just going to go get some ice cream, Doc. Yeah.
Oh man. Chocolate? Scatman, you killed it.
He was good. We didn't talk about him much, but yeah.
He was just wonderful in that. I think he didn't know what he was getting into. I really do.
You like lamb, Doc?
Yeah, oh my God. In his apartment, dude, I always want those painting, those prints he has over his bed and over his TV.
Well, I think, was that his, oh, okay, I guess it was. I thought he was on vacation down in Florida.
Nah, I think vacation's his home.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, who? Yeah. That was funny, man.
That makes sense.
Anyway, 40 years, and Shining's not going to go anywhere, Johnny.
I know, Billy. As much as I may want it to, I'll give it another watch sometime soon.
If you don't like it, don't do it.
Well, you know, people change over time.
This is true, but I think you're a man set in his ways.
I'm, you know, maybe I've always been the caretaker of this poor opinion of a classic horror film. So,
on that note, your money's no good here, Johnny. Get out, you bastard.
Sounds good, man.
All right. Farewell from snowy Colorado.
No sled dogs making it down there. I could go on all night, Bill. Cut it.
Oh, okay. Goodbye.
See ya.